Chiropractic manipulation is one of the most popular treatments for chronic back pain in this country, but how or why it works remains something of a mystery. So on today's edition of Please Explain, we have decided to take a look at chiropractic and at the debate over its effectiveness and its possible risks. We are joined now by Dr. James Dillard, author of The Chronic Pain Solution, former medical director of Columbia's Rosenthal Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. He is now in private practice. And by Dr. Christine Gertz, Vice Chancellor of Research and Health Policy at the Palmer Center for Chiropractic Research in Iowa. Welcome to our show.
Thank you.
And Christine, first, let's clarify the terminology. Why don't we use the term chiropractic medicine?
Well, that's an interesting question, probably because chiropractic, for the most part, grew up outside of mainstream medicine. And so to a certain extent, we've developed our own terminology, and that is just not a term that we've adopted as a profession.
Well, James, you've done both. What does the chiropractic side of your experience consist of? What are the main concepts?
I'm sorry?
What are the main concepts?
Hi, Christine. I went all the way through chiropractic school, and I practiced for a while, and then I went through medical school. The training, the first 2 years are really quite similar, and then the second 2 years are rather different. In chiropractic school, you really do focus on the musculoskeletal system a lot in diagnosis and treatment of general musculoskeletal and orthopedic type problems, and then you focus really on a lot of the techniques that are used by chiropractors, whereas in medical school you really become sort of mini MDs and follow the residents around through the various different services in the hospital, through, you know, obstetrics and general internal medicine and psychiatry and pediatrics and that sort of thing. So the training is rather different in the second 2 years. They're really not comparable in a lot of ways. And chiropractic as a profession has come a long way in the last 20 years. We now have very rigorous academic chiropractic centers such as the one that Dr. Gertz is involved with, and I know her and her husband quite well. So it really has come a long way. There are now literally hundreds of chiropractors who also have PhDs in biomechanics and in scientific fields that are looking into what goes on with chiropractic adjustment, and they really have developed a lot of science in the last 10, 20 years.
Well, Christine, James said that the last 20 years have been important, but how long has chiropractic been around?
Actually, chiropractic has been around since 1895. It was started right here in where I'm at in Davenport, Iowa, by a magnetic healer by the name of Daniel David Palmer. The first chiropractic college, Palmer College of Chiropractic, started just a couple of years later in 1897.
Aren't there two competing schools of chiropractic, Palmer's and another one that was started by another chiropractor, Willard Carver?
Well, right now there are actually 16 colleges of chiropractic across the country. And I wouldn't necessarily, over the years, I think the dichotomy between different types of chiropractic education has narrowed just because we are regulated by the Council on Chiropractic Education, and which has specific requirements for what is included in a chiropractic education.
Is chiropractic found all around the world?
Chiropractic is increasingly found all around the world. Somebody told me just the other day that there are now more chiropractic colleges outside the United States than there are inside the United States.
James, I mentioned back pain as an area where people generally seek out help from a chiropractor. Does chiropractic mainly concentrate on the spine?
I think that's the way most people think of chiropractic. You know, I just came back from 5 days of a review of general internal medicine at Harvard Medical School. It was grueling, reviewed absolutely everything, and I just finished this in the beginning of February. And one of the lectures was from Jeffrey Katz, who is a professor of medicine and orthopedic surgery at Harvard, and I was quite surprised. The paradigm has really changed, Leonard. Professor Katz said quite definitively and categorically, he said, chiropractic does work. and I saw eyes sort of go up around the auditorium there at Harvard. He presented some of the research, and I spoke to him afterwards. I mean, this is from a very senior professor at Harvard Medical School, and we talked about some of the research that we both knew in common. I think the paradigm really has shifted a lot, and the question becomes, is chiropractic mainstream? Is it still alternative medicine? I'd be interested in what Dr. Gertz had to say about that, too, but I think for management of low back pain, Professor Katz at Harvard was quite positive about medical doctors often looking to have good professional relationships with a chiropractor or two and to utilize these professionals perhaps as a first line for uncomplicated back pain.
We're talking about chiropractic on today's Please Explain with Drs. James Dillard and Christine Gertz. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Wasn't there a time when the medical profession actually was so critical of chiropractic that it resulted in a court case, Christine?
Yes, that is correct. I believe it was in 1987 that the chiropractic profession won a lawsuit against the American Medical Association in which a judge determined that the AMA had attempted to eradicate the chiropractic profession.
And why would that be? James, you are trained both as a medical doctor and as a chiropractor.
Well, Leonard, the AMA has had a history of actually going after competing professions. Around the turn of the century, they had gone after the dentists and tried to wipe out dentists. It was actually in the late 1800s. They tried to wipe out what were then sort of dentist barbers. Then through the earlier part of the 20th century, they tried to wipe out the osteopaths, doctors who have D.O. after their name instead of M.D. They finally cut a deal with the osteopaths in 1950 and agreed that osteopaths could be licensed in all 50 states as physicians with the same scope of practice as MDs, and our osteopathic physician colleagues do practice right along with us, MDs. And then they sort of focused on chiropractic, and as Dr. Gertz said, the Wilkes case was settled with a negative outcome for the American Medical Association, the American College of Surgeons, and they've kind of backed off of chiropractic at this point. It's been a long history for the AMA opposing other professions.
Can you imagine a time when a doctor will be knowledgeable in chiropractic, Chinese herbal medicines, acupuncture, or whatever else seems to work?
Well, interestingly, these are now being taught as electives in the majority of medical schools in the United States. Columbia, my institution, was one of the first to get on board with this. We now have a consortium of medical schools that are working together, the academic consortium, and increasingly medical students are driving this. They're wanting to learn more about this, and increasingly conventional physicians are learning more about things like acupuncture and herbal medicine not so much spinal manipulation. I think that really is something that requires a lot of expertise with the hands, and I would leave that in the hands of chiropractors who are specialty trained and osteopaths who are specialty trained. It takes a lot of manual skill to do this correctly and not hurt people.
By the way, if you have any questions, we invite your calls at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Christine, what are the most common conditions that people use chiropractic for? Do they usually go because of chronic back pain?
About 90% or more than 90% of people that visit a doctor of chiropractic do so for some sort of musculoskeletal condition, and about 60% of visits to a chiropractor are for low back pain. Mm-hmm. The majority of the rest are for neck pain, headaches, mid-back pain, with a smaller percentage somewhere in the 3 to 5% range who are visiting chiropractors for other types of conditions such as temporomandibular disorder or hypertension or even general wellness.
Hasn't chiropractic been used to turn around breech babies before they were born?
I am not aware of any studies in that particular area. I can tell you that if I had a breech baby, I'd try anything, but I'm not sure of any studies in that.
James, you're a pain management specialist. Is chiropractic a central part of that treatment?
At this point, I use a mixture of chiropractic and osteopathic and some of the older English traditions in manual medicine, the Syriac tradition. But I think that manual therapies and massage can be enormously helpful for many people suffering with acute and chronic pain. And a lot of the research literature bears this out. We have good, solid research now that shows that manual therapies, chiropractic manual therapy, can be tremendously helpful, particularly for uncomplicated low back and neck pain.
Now, many people associate, Christine, chiropractic with that crack on the back. I had a chiropractor tell me that if, maybe he was of a different school, but if you heard that crack, something was going wrong.
When the adjustment actually occurred?
Yeah.
I think that most practicing chiropractors would disagree with that.
Uh-huh. Why? What's behind that cracking sound?
It's actually the cavitation of the joint, which emits just a little bit of a gas. It's the same thing as that. What happens when you crack your knuckles?
Mm-hmm. How does the spine become misaligned, or why do certain vertebrae become painful, James?
Well, I'd like to clear something up here, and I hope that Dr. Gertz is going to agree with me. It's not quite so much misaligned. One of the things that I think we're really looking for is what we call the subluxation complex, and there's a lot more modern science to this now. What we're really looking for is an area of the spine that's not functioning properly. It's not that a bone sort of goes out. Where does it go out? It goes out to the bar for a drink. It's not so much that it goes out. We're looking for areas where the spine is stiff. It seems to have a lot of muscle tension around it. It tends to be painful. There are many other signs that a good chiropractor is going to look for. And they're also going to look for a way in which that area doesn't seem to function normally like the rest of the spine. It doesn't have a certain kind of flexibility. And we call this the subluxation complex. And a good chiropractor is going to look for this, this complex of symptoms around that subluxation, and is going to try to normalize the movement. There isn't going to be a lot of, translational movement in the spine. It's not going to suddenly go from being way over there to being way over here. But you can clear up a lot of spasm, a lot of pain. You reset a lot of the muscles. It's almost like you're rebooting the computer in that area of the spine. And we think that that's what's going on neurologically as well.
Christine, spinal manipulation has also been used to treat headaches. How does that work?
Well, it actually seems to work quite well for people, especially that have muscle tension headaches. Why it works, we're a little bit less clear on. Spinal manipulation for a number of conditions is similar to other manual therapies and, in fact, many other types of clinical practices throughout the healthcare system in which we don't know as much as we'd like to about what the actual mechanism of action or what might be happening. It's possible with headaches that we're somehow interrupting a cycle in which causes muscle spasm, which causes more lack of motion in the joint, which then in turn could cause nerve irritation or muscle spasms in some other way, that we're able to interrupt that cycle and cause people to experience less pain.
How is that any different than a massage therapy or a physical therapy?
That's a really good question, and I hope someday we know the answer to it.
Do you think there's a placebo effect, as some people suggest?
Well, I have thought a lot about this concept of a placebo effect, and what I would characterize it just a little bit differently as non-specific effects. So when you have an encounter between any kind of a healthcare provider, but in this case we'll say a chiropractor and a patient, there are a lot of things that happen in that encounter. One of them may be spinal manipulation and adjustment. It probably is. But in addition to that, there is frequently, because chiropractors and patients tend to see each other on multiple visits through a short period of time, there's a real relationship that can develop there. The doctor of chiropractic is very likely to give nutritional advice on weight loss and smoking cessation, exercises that would be helpful both for their back pain and for their health in general. In addition, we often use various physical therapy modalities such as hot packs and different types of electrical stimulation. So the question is, and I do randomized clinical trials all the time where I'm trying to figure out what's the best control group. Well, it's hard to figure out what the best control group is when you don't know which of those components actually have a therapeutic benefit. And so as a clinician, I have to say that if the placebo effect can be caused by the fact that the patient believes strongly that they're going to get better and that the doctor of chiropractic can help facilitate that belief, I want to take a little bit of credit for that. As a scientist, it's something that I want to know more about so that I can design better and better clinical trials.
We're going to go to a break and then take some listener calls, but do you want to add anything to that, Dr. Dillon?
Well, you know, Len, there's never been a good trial done on the therapeutic effects of smiling and shaking the patient's hand, and for that reason, I'm never going to smile or shake the patient's hand again because there's no evidence for it. You get my point.
Yes.
I agree completely with Christine. There are a lot of nonspecific effects. There's a lot of nonspecific effects in an utterly conventional medical practice, and so I think it's hard for a researcher to tease these things out. We do have a lot of research going on with manipulative therapies, and I think we just have to stay ahead of looking at that and seeing where that research goes.
My guests are Dr. James Dillard, who's both a medical doctor and a doctor of chiropractic and author of The Chronic Pain Solution, and Dr. Christine Goetz of the Palmer Center for Chiropractic Research in Davenport, Iowa, which seems to be the central area for chiropractic study. We will continue our conversation. Take your calls at 212-433-9692 after this. We're back with today's Please Explain Look at Chiropractic with Dr. Christine Goetz of the Palmer Center for Chiropractic Research and Dr. James Dillard, author of The Chronic Pain Solution. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Our first caller is Larry from Bayside. Hi, Larry. You're on the air.
Hi, Leonard. It's good to talk to you. I'm very glad to hear your guest talk about simple, uncomplicated back pain, because in the history of chiropractic, many practitioners have tried to cure all kinds of illnesses with it. In fact, the history of chiropractic is pretty disturbing. When I looked into it, discovered that D.D. Palmer was basically a carnival show performer who waved magnets over people with various illnesses and came up with the theory that all human illness was a result of misalignment or subluxation of the back. And in the 60s and 70s, there were a whole series of scandals of chiropractics trying to cure cancer and chronic illnesses that led to the death of various patients and problems.
Okay, well, let me jump to the bottom line. Well, you think chiropractic is still kind of quack medicine?
I think that it's useful for muscular skeletal problems and lower back pain, and probably has no other useful effects for more chronic conditions. And some chiropractors still try to cure other things. I also think that you'd probably be better off seeing an osteopath who has the similar training for spinal problems, but also can prescribe medicines and more conventional therapies.
Doctors?
Well, since you're talking about osteopaths, it's a little bit more in my realm in terms of being a medical doctor. The majority of DOs, or osteopathic physicians, who are licensed just like us MDs, the majority of those DOs do not do osteopathic manipulation and are not formally trained beyond an elective level in the third and fourth years in osteopathic medical schools. Now, that being said, there are a number of osteopaths who are well-trained in osteopathic manipulative therapy, what we call OMTs. OMT-trained DOs are often very good and are very good at what they do. And I work with these professionals, and they can be fabulous. And I agree with you. There are many different flavors, like flavors of ice cream, flavors of coffee. It depends on what you want. In terms of treating other serious medical illness, I tend to agree with you, although I got to tell you, we treat a lot of serious illness from what we call an integrative model now, and this is the model that we had at the Rosenthal Center at Columbia, and the model that I use in my private practice in Manhattan, which is where we use conventional medicine, conventional mainstream medicine, and we also use the best of what we can find from the complementary and alternative world based on the evidence, the research evidence. So I'm not going to ignore some of the things from the complementary and alternative medicine world, particularly in my area of pain medicine, because I've found that if I just throw morphine and things like that at people, they don't do well.
Christine,
use a mixture. So if I use manual therapies along with a little bit of something from my training in pain medicine, I feel like I get much better results.
Christine, what about his accusation of a quack medicine past? I mean, I immediately thought, well, you know, regular medicine, they used to bleed people. They did all sorts of things that we now consider horrible. But has chiropractic gotten past that sort of thing?
I think in many ways, it's important to remember that in 1895, when the profession started, we knew very little about the germ theory, for instance, and so the fact that the nervous system might be responsible for all disease and that aligning the spine might help with that was probably no more crazy than any other theory that was currently out there. I think that as the medical profession has become more and more evidence-based over the last 100 years and certainly over the last 25 years or so, the same thing is definitely happening within the chiropractic profession. Palmer College of Chiropractic, which is where I'm at, as well as a number of other chiropractic colleges now, have grants from the National Institutes of Health specifically to incorporate evidence-based practices and into the curriculum, the core curriculum in our training programs. I'm a scientist, and so my tendency is to follow the science with chiropractic and with any other types of medical care that I am seeking for myself, my family, or my patients. And right now, the preponderance of studies that have been conducted on chiropractic are in the area of uncomplicated low back pain for a number of reasons, not even necessarily because that's all that we believe we might be effective with, but because doing a clinical trial is so complicated and you want to start with the simple things first and then work your way up. But I, for instance, right now have funding from NIH to conduct a study, trying to replicate a study that showed that a particular form of chiropractic manipulation was actually quite effective in lowering blood pressure. However, it was a relatively small study. It had a pretty narrow patient population. So we're trying to see if we can replicate that study using a larger population in more of a real-world setting. So my thought is we know quite at this point, I would say that spinal manipulation for low back pain is pretty much as good as for uncomplicated low back pain is pretty much as good as anything else that we have to offer, and I'm hoping to keep an open mind on other things as we do the necessary research to see that.
A listener, Danielle in Manhattan, asks, is chiropractic adjustment useful or advisable for herniated discs?
The science on that is not as strong as it is for uncomplicated mechanical back pain, particularly acute. The hierarchy in the research literature goes, acute mechanical back pain is where we really see the data shining, particularly getting people back to work quicker than other types of approaches. The satisfaction data is very strong. Patients are very satisfied with chiropractic care, much more so than conventional care.
Are you talking about sciatica?
Sciatica is a symptom. It's a catch bag. There's a lot of things in sciatica, like cough. Cough can be caused by a virus or also lung cancer. Sciatica can be caused by many things. Certainly, chiropractic can help with a number of causes of sciatica, but the data for chiropractic is best for mechanical back pain, particularly acute. Chronic mechanical back pain is also pretty good, not quite as strong, and it's not quite as strong for clear disc syndromes. That's sort of the hierarchy. And then for things like spinal stenosis, it's probably a little weaker in terms of its power to help those problems.
If I may interrupt quickly, I think it's important to remember that lack of evidence is not evidence against.
Correct.
And what I would say to your caller is that we simply don't know the answer to that question from a scientific standpoint because the studies have not yet been done.
Sharon in Englewood asks, why do chiropractors need more than one visit? It seems to me that they try to get you to come back as often as possible.
I've heard that many times, and actually NIH is currently supporting a study with a group of scientists in Portland, Oregon, to see if we can try to figure out how many visits is ideal for back pain. Again, it's a matter of we're just not quite – what we're talking about is dosing, and we really don't have good answers about what the appropriate dose is. I would like to add, though, that in most databases that follow that where payers pay for chiropractic, the average number of visits for a chiropractor is somewhere in the 11 to 12 range. So not quite as many as people might think.
Amy from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi. Speaking of insurance, or anyway, I know that in New York State, health insurance covers chiropractic, but I was wondering what the picture is in the other states, and also how the healthcare legislation in Congress might affect that.
The majority of healthcare plans actually do offer some sort of chiropractic benefit. Chiropractic is also a covered benefit in Medicare in most states under Medicaid and is offered on military treatment facilities for the Department of Defense and also in VAs. So increasingly, chiropractic is covered by a variety of health payers. What healthcare reform might mean for chiropractic and reimbursement for chiropractic is a little bit unclear to me. This is something that I'm following closely, and right now I just don't have sufficient detail about what is going to happen. However, I do know that both the House and Senate provisions of the healthcare reform bill that have been under discussion have some provision that would allow basically willing providers who are able to meet the qualifications and credentialing standards of a healthcare plan to be allowed to be in that plan.
James, a listener asks about the risks and asks, isn't there somewhat of a link between stroke and chiropractic adjustment?
Yeah, the research on this is mixed. There have been strokes, usually I don't want to get too technical on this, but it's the posterior circulation to the brain. If you look at the actual papers that have been published on this, this is looking at individual events where somebody has turned up with a stroke, and there's supposed to be an association with having seen a chiropractor or had a chiropractic manipulation. The problem with all this data is that there are a certain number of spontaneous strokes that occur involving the arteries going up into the brain, and one of the most common things that a person feels if they're developing one of these kinds of strokes is neck pain. So how do you differentiate between somebody who's developing one of these strokes, develops neck pain, goes to a chiropractor, gets treated, and then the stroke gets completed? It's hard to tease these things apart. If you look at the neurological literature, there have been papers that have estimated this as being a real risk. Others downplay it. I would say that the risk of stroke from manipulating the neck has been somewhat overestimated. In some places, like in England, they're really trying to scare the heck out of the spinal manipulators in terms of not ever touching the neck. Here in the United States, we're a little bit more conservative about that. I'd be interested to see what Dr. Gertz has to say about that body of research.
Leonard, if you don't mind my jumping in on that.
No, please.
James, you may not be familiar with the paper that was part of the Bone and Joint Decade Task Force
on
neck
but...
pain and its associated disorders. And basically, it's very hard to there have been incidents of stroke after a person has visited a chiropractor. And so the question I want to know as a patient and as a chiropractor is there a causal relationship? Did I, in fact, cause that stroke? It's very difficult to answer that question because it's such a very rare event. It's been estimated at between 1 in 400,000 to 3 to 6 per 10 million adjustments.
Yep. Yep.
And so the most comprehensive study that's been done, the definitive study to date, that what they did was a large general population case control study where they had a large database. They were able to track basically all adults in, I think it's in Ottawa, in Canada, over a 9-year period. They pulled out everybody who had the type of stroke that is thought to possibly be associated with chiropractic care. And then they compared it to cases that did not have a stroke and looked at, were the people who had a stroke more likely to go to a chiropractor or to go to a family practice physician in the 30 days before they actually had the stroke?
Now,
and they found is that you're equally as likely to have been to a chiropractor or a family practice doc before you had a stroke. And the authors of that study conclude that, as James said, that people have symptoms that are associated with this pre-stroke phase that are causing them to seek some sort of health care, be it by a chiropractor or a medical physician.
Now, we have less than a minute left, but interestingly, looking over the phone calls that are coming in, half of them seem to be about people saying they tried a bunch of things and only chiropractic worked, and another half say they tried chiropractic and something else, physical therapy or whatever else worked. So perhaps the jury is still out for most of our listeners. But I find that quite interesting. I guess it works in some cases, doesn't work in others, and other kinds of medicine work in some cases and don't work in others. And my great thanks to the two of you for talking with us today on our Please Explain devoted to chiropractic. We've been talking with Dr. Christine Gertz, Vice Chancellor of Research and Health Policy at Palmer Center for Chiropractic Research in Davenport, Iowa, and with Dr. James Dillard, who is both a medical doctor and a doctor of chiropractic, author of The Chronic Pain Solution, and former medical director of Columbia's Rosenthal Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine. Thank you both.